Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, December 1st, 2017. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Teacher Honored, You're Not Going to Do This. Mattoon teacher opens up about subduing student armed with gun. Mattoon. Math teacher Angela McQueen said she was focused on saving students' lives when she helped subdue a student shooter inside the Mattoon High School cafeteria on September 20th. I sprang into action because I looked over and I saw a student pulling a gun out and he was aiming it at students to his right, McQueen said during a video interview. I thought, oh crap, he's going to start shooting. So I immediately lunged at the gun and got the gun up in the air as quickly as I could, as fast as I could, because I didn't want him to hit the students. The Illinois Education Association Teachers Union released Thursday the video of an interview it recently conducted with McQueen, who is a math and physical education teacher. McQueen was also honored at the high school Thursday for her life-saving action September 20th. An IEA news release noted that because of McQueen's work, quick response to contain the shooter, only one student was injured. The injured student was initially hospitalized, but since has been released and is now back at school. The gun welding student, Josiah Lyons, 14, has been charged with aggravated battery with a firearm. The suspect is a juvenile, but the Herald and Review has opted to use his name, as his identity has been widely disseminated and already made public. Lyons is undergoing a mental evaluation and has a hearing in Coles County Circuit Court scheduled for January 11th. We are forever grateful to Angela for her courageous actions that saved the lives of our kids. She was a ray of light in our darkest hour, Mattoon School District Superintendent Larry Lilly said in the news release. McQueen said the shooter fired a couple of rounds before she was able to force him to point the gun up toward the ceiling of the cafeteria. Officials with the Mattoon Police Department and the school district have said that Mattoon Police School Resource Officer Casey Alexander arrived in the cafeteria and took the shooter into custody shortly after McQueen's actions. In that moment, you don't really think, you just react. To me, it's almost like the mama bear instinct. I don't have kids of my own right now, but it's the instinct of, you're not going to do this to my kids, McQueen said. These are still my kids, even though I don't know every single kid in there. You're not going to do this to my kids, and you're not going to do this at my school, she said. McQueen said that she always has taken an active shooter training at the high school seriously, but she had thought school shooting would never happen in Mattoon because it is such a nice, quiet, small town. You never think it's going to happen where you're at, McQueen said. Still, she said she always has been mindful of the message of one of her favorite Bible verses, John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. It was always in the back of my mind. Would I do this for just anybody? McQueen said of risking her life to save strangers. She added later, everybody, I think, would like to think that they would do that for just anybody, and now I know I would. A portion of McQueen's interview was released Thursday on the IEA's Facebook page. Extended footage from the video shows McQueen visiting with students in the school cafeteria and the gymnasium and at work in her classroom. McQueen said in the interview that, quote, I really just want to have a positive impact on kids. I felt like that was what I was meant to do. I feel like that even more now, end quote. McQueen was honored Thursday at the high school by the Illinois State Police, the Illinois branch of the FBI, and the Society of Former Special Agents, the City of Mattoon, the Mattoon Police Department, and the Mattoon School District. College football. Tired of losing, players leaving, fans' angst grows. Many questions remain as Illini enter football off-season. It's not difficult to feel the disappointment and unhappiness that accumulates in a 6-year period during which the Illini have not had a winning football season. The empty seats that grow by the game are one way to tell. Same with the fans' displeasure posted on message boards or social media. Believe it or not, folks become downright unpleasant. People are tired of losing, tired of watching their favorite team look bad doing it, and tired of being told a better product is coming down the road. Larger numbers seem to be drifting toward a state of apathy, and they might as well hang a new shingle on the front door. Wake me when it's better. We monitor that disappointment on a daily basis, but more difficult to calculate is the mind-numbing wear and tear that eats at an athlete-like linebacker Trey Watson. Through one redshirt season and 3 years of play, he has seen 3 head coaches, 3 defensive coordinators, and 4 position coaches, plus 2.5 athletic directors. He's played through all kinds of bumps and bruises and bounced back from a mid-season knee injury this year. When healthy, Watson is probably the most complete defensive football player on the Illini roster. But after so much chaos and trembling since continued uncertainty, Watson just wants one final season where he has had a chance to be part of a winner. Who can blame him? So he's one of 4 players who this week announced plans to transfer. Unfortunately, 3 of them are productive defensive players who could have made a difference next season. The collateral damage that comes from prolonged losing and constant change will also send safety Patrick Nelson, defensive lineman Tito Odenigbo, and offensive lineman Gabe Meganson looking elsewhere. I'd expect quarterback Jeff George Jr. to transfer as Illinois makes clear its desire to pursue dual-threat quarterbacks. If Casey Crouch wants a chance to play again as a quarterback, he should transfer also. And that says nothing of the coaches. This is the time of season when coaching staffs from coast to coast are being reshaped, and don't be surprised if there's something shuffling on Coach Levy Smith's staff, too. More fundamental instability could occur if some of the better recruits Illinois has verbal agreements with fail to make it official when the NCAA's new early signing period commences on December 20th. As head coach Levy Smith recently warned about counting commitments before signed documents are in hand, these are engagements. There hasn't been a wedding yet. Illinois is now tasked with replacing at least 4 veteran players, 3 of whom are going to contribute and possibly start on the defense. So Levy has to decide whether to bring in junior college players or graduate transfers, assuming there might be mutual interest. Last season, Levy got an unusually early jump on spring practice, starting on February 14th, Valentine's Day. He said he won't start that early this year, but whenever it begins, all eyes will be on Cam Thomas and his development. Quarterback remains one of the one position that must present a viable answer by next September. We know what it feels like to navigate through a football season without a hopeful answer. We just watched that. The record was 2-10, and it was neither pretty nor something you'd want to repeat. It's been pointed out that athletics director Josh Whitman is paying Levy Smith a lot of money to fix his football program. The way it feels today, if Levy can pull it off, he will have earned every penny. This is Mark Tupper. Artists, patrons leave their generous mark on community. Toys for Tats provides gifts for those who might have gone without. Decatur. The third Toys for Tats drew people from across the area, with a line of people outside Oakwood Tattoo eager to donate a child's toy in exchange for a tattoo. Participants were asked to bring a new unwrapped child's toy with a value of $25 to receive a free tattoo from one of 14 volunteer artists. The toys will be donated to the WAND Spirit of Giving Toy Drive on Friday, today, December 1st. "We just want to make sure everyone gets the best Christmas," said Holly Harrison, shop manager of Oakwood Tattoo. Less than halfway into the event, which lasted from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., the parlor had 117 people signed up and waiting to receive their tattoo. Last year, the group raised $6,000 worth of toys, but hoped to raise between $8,000 and $10,000 at this year's event, Harrison said. "Some people dropped off a few $100 worth of toys," she said. "A lot of people are so generous they just come by and donate the toy and have no intention of getting a tattoo," Harrison said. "There are 22 tattoos from which to choose, which would typically cost $150 on a regular day. People drove from all over and were just excited to hang out with us," she said. "We're hoping eventually that we're going to have to rent out a different building to fit more tattooers in," she said. Ginger Thomas donated a toy helicopter and chose an eagle for her third tattoo. She said she came to the event because it was a good cause, and a group of her friends were getting tattoos as well. Mark Grant chose a flowery design for his newest tattoo. He said he is a frequent customer at the shop and was happy to support the event. "People are coming through and bringing something nice for people that really need something," said Tyler Brown, a tattoo artist at Oakwood Tattoo. Brown said people from all walks of life enjoy the idea of giving gifts for children. "We have regulars, people who've never been to the shop before, and people from all over the Midwest who come to get tattoos," he said. "The event is powerful for the people in the community and at the shop," Brown said. "People want to give back as much as we do," he said. "Every year we make it bigger and bigger so we can give back more to our community." Brace yourselves for the arrival of winter blast. Decatur. If you haven't had a chance to wrap up your yard work or get those Christmas lights up, now is the time. Colder temperatures are skating into central Illinois. The National Weather Service said Thursday that a pair of weather systems will bring significantly colder air and a slight chance of snow mixed with rain by the middle of next week. "It is the beginning, probably, of at least a cold snap for a little while. We fluctuate this time of year, but some deep, cold air is headed this way," said Heather Stanley, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. "Temperatures will remain mild in the 50s, with sunny or mostly sunny skies the rest of this week, but will surge to 60 degrees by Monday, with a chance of rain." Stanley said the first system will dip into the Midwest early next week and cold air will follow behind it. As that cold air settles in, a second, smaller system will move in later in the week and bring a slight chance of precipitation, likely a little rain, with a slight chance of snow mixed in. Temperatures begin to fall off fast, with a high near 48 degrees on Tuesday, dropping to an overnight low of 30 and peaking at just 38 on Wednesday, when sunny skies return, according to the Weather Service. Stanley said the drop in temperatures also will revive wind chills, with northwesterly winds making highs in the 30s feel like the 20s. As the winds lighten up Wednesday evening into Thursday, when the temperatures will be in the 20s, the chill will still be felt. "If you have to be out in the early morning, it might feel like the teens, but with lows that low, it doesn't take much to feel that chilly," Stanley said. According to the Weather Service, the longer-range outlook indicates that below-normal temperatures late next week are likely to carry into the middle of December. A couple of clipper systems could take aim on the area during the cold snap, possibly bringing some measurable snow to central Illinois. On page 2, Dems unveil database plan. Chicago. Democratic state lawmakers announced a plan Thursday to halt Illinois' participation in a controversial multi-state voter registration database after efforts to persuade the State Board of Elections failed. The legislation would remove Illinois from the Kansas-run Interstate Voter Registration Cross-Check Program, a free and voluntary program that helps states determine if voters are registered in more than one state. However, advocacy groups in Illinois and elsewhere argue cross-check isn't secure and could contribute to voter suppression. They also raise questions about the partisan ties of Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach. He oversees cross-check and is a chairman of President Donald Trump's Election Fraud Commission. In this week's HeraldandReview.com calendar, today, Friday Night Magic, 6:30 p.m., Board Night, K-N-I-G-H-T, $6 to $15. Formats, standard, modern, or draft. Saturday, Snowman Sign Making with Stephanie Roman, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Madden Arts Center, $25 to $30. Create a charming snowman sign using treated pieces of wood, stencils, and special paints. All materials are provided. Sunday, Vespers at 2 and 7 p.m., Kirkland Fine Arts Center, Millikan University. The price is $10 to $12. In page 3 on local and state news, 52-year-old planned to meet 13-year-old in hotel room. Decatur. A 52-year-old man who believed he was meeting a 13-year-old Decatur boy for sex in a hotel room appeared before a judge Thursday to be sentenced as a sex offender. Loniel Nichols pleaded guilty to traveling to meet a minor for the purpose of engaging in sex. In a plea agreement negotiated by his attorney, Deborah Riley, Nichols was sentenced to 30 months probation, ordered to register as a sex offender for 10 years, report for sex offender evaluation and treatment, and pay a $500 fine plus other court costs. Judge Jeffrey Giesler stipulated that Nichols must pay a further $500 fine to support the work of the Decatur Police Crimes Against Children Investigation Fund, which helps pay for the law enforcement work that caught him. Outlining the case, Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz said that in the spring of 2016, Nichols believed he was talking to the adult boyfriend of a Decatur woman on the Internet. This man, who was in fact an undercover detective, had posted an ad aimed at people seeking a relationship with someone under the age of 17. Kurtz said the character played by the detective was offering to pimp out the 13-year-old son of the woman he was dating. Kurtz said the conversation got down to specifying certain sex acts to be performed for a $150 fee, and Nichols arranged to rendezvous with the fictitious boy on the evening of May 25th at a Decatur hotel. He walked into the lobby and was arrested, Kurtz told the court. Giesler passed sentence after reading a confidential report on Nichols and, at his attorney's request, allowed a written stipulation in the sentencing that said Nichols would be permitted to live with his minor children. ISU Giving Tuesday tops at $500,000. Donations from events will benefit two lab schools and radio station, Normal. Although this year's Giving Tuesday fundraising totals fell short of 2016, Illinois State University officials saw several reasons to celebrate. ISU received 1,473 gifts, totaling $525,496, down from 1,670 gifts totaling $593,936,000 last year. We are excited to report another year of exceeding $500,000, said Laura Way, Executive Director of Annual Giving at ISU. Giving Tuesday also brought donations to other schools in the area. Tuesday helped push the number of new donors to ISU since it began its Redbirds Rising fundraising campaign in July 2013, past the 15,000 mark. she said. That comprehensive campaign, the second in the school's history, seeks to raise $150 million. Money from Giving Tuesday also went to ISU's two laboratory schools, University High School and Metcalf Elementary School, as well as its public radio station, WGLT. Way said this year's campaign had a broader reach, with many donation options offered so people could direct their gifts to their areas of interest. She singled out the School of Communication and the Division of Student Affairs for their efforts to involve alumni, students, advisory boards, and others in Giving Tuesday. Heartland Community College raised $4,200 on Giving Tuesday, according to Chris Downing, Executive Director of Development at Heartland. He said the money would go toward student scholarships to be awarded this spring. For us, it was not about the number of dollars, but getting more to participate, he said. We see this as an opportunity for engagement. An anonymous donor issued a challenge to donate $500 if 25 people donated to Heartland by noon, and another $500 if 25 more people donated by 5 p.m. Both challenges were met, with a total of 51 donations by 5 p.m., said Downing. We know how important Giving Tuesday is for a lot of charities out there, said Downing, who was pleased by the support others received too. It's a reflection of how compassionate our community can be. Lincoln College raised $47,000 from 88 donors for its unrestricted Lincoln Fund as part of Giving Tuesday, according to Deb Eckerman, Vice President for Institutional Advancement. Those donations will be matched by Lincoln College alumnus and board member Jeffrey Swallow, who is matching up to $100,000 in donations to the Lincoln Fund through the end of the year. Eckerman said, "We were thrilled with what was received on Giving Tuesday, even though the college did not make a major push. The college is planning its own Giving Day early next year as part of an $8 million campaign announced in August with the theme, Embracing Our Past, Empowering Our Future. Illinois Wesleyan University concentrates its major fundraising push on All In for Wesleyan each April rather than Giving Tuesday. However, spokesman John Twork said, IWU saw a significant increase in online donations from alumni, parents, and friends of the university on Giving Tuesday. In area briefs, Decatur inspector blames fire on cigarettes. Fire inspectors said Thursday that smoking materials were the cause of a Tuesday fire at a Decatur senior living facility in which a woman was found dead in her apartment. Decatur Fire Department Inspector Brad Gilmar said initial reports indicate cigarettes may have been the specific smoking materials that led to the fire at the Oxford House apartments, but the department's investigation is ongoing. On Tuesday, Decatur Fire Battalion Chief Mike McGeehan said firefighters were sent to the apartment complex, 2700 North Monroe Street, shortly before 5 p.m. The fire was contained to a third-floor apartment where the body of 62-year-old Jane Morthland was found inside. Gilmar said the fire caused $10,000 damage to the building and $4,000 worth of damage to the contents inside of Morthland's apartment. Decatur County Coroner Michael E. Day said Wednesday that an autopsy was performed on Morthland at the McLean County Coroner's morgue that afternoon. Preliminary results showed no signs of traumatic injury or foul play, he said. While a fire was extinguished in the area where Morthland was found, Day said the official cause of death is pending further toxicology and forensic testing. It may be several weeks for those tests to be completed, he said. McGeehan said the fire was put out within 10 minutes. Third-floor residents were moved to lower floors as firefighters returned to their apartments once the fire was out, he said. No other injuries were reported. Decatur Police: suspect's blood led to arrest. A man accused of breaking into a pair of Decatur homes led authorities to him with his blood, police said. Sworn affidavits said that 52-year-old suspect smashed the glass in a front door, cutting himself, when he broke into a house in the 1200 block of East Walnut Street on February 18th and stole a video game system and diapers. The affidavit said he cut himself again February 21st while breaking a window to enter a house in the 1400 block of North Jasper Street to steal a television and more diapers. Decatur Police Detective James Atkinson said police collected blood samples each time, and an Illinois State Police database made a match with the suspect's DNA, which was indexed due to his criminal record. The suspect was arrested Wednesday and charged with 2 counts of residential burglary. He remained in the Macon County Jail on Thursday in lieu of posting $10,000 bond. Bond lowered for youth coach facing sex charges. Charleston. After hearing that an investigation resulted in multiple accounts of forced sexual activity, unwanted contact, and more, a judge said a high bond was needed for a youth basketball program coach accused of sex offenses with former players. However, factors such as Barry S. Wolf's lack of criminal record led the judge to agree to reduce his bond Thursday, though several restrictions will be in place. Coles County Circuit Judge Brian O'Brien set Wolf's bond at $2 million, lowering it from $5.5 million. No contact provisions are in place, and Wolf must be on electronically monitored home confinement if he does post bond, O'Brien ordered. Wolf, 53, of Martinsville, is charged in Coles County with multiple offenses alleging sexual activity with 2 teenage girls on several occasions between March 2013 and September 2015. He was a coach and developer of the Central Illinois Storm, an area American Athletic Union basketball program for girls age 17 and younger in Illinois and Indiana. During Thursday's court hearing, defense attorney Ed Pirano filed a bond reduction motion. In opposing the motion, state's attorney Brian Bauer called on police testimony indicating Wolf threatened players about their participation in the program. Lieutenant Sam Gaines of the Mattoon Police Department said the girls said Wolf told them, "I am your way to college," and the sexual conduct was part of showing their loyalty to him. Gaines said one former player of Wolf's came forward in October out of fear that Wolf was going to visit her at the college she attended. She said, and others said, Wolf ignored repeated requests to not contact them, he said. The accounts from the 2 former players listed in the charges against Wolf and 2 others police interviewed were largely consistent, according to Gaines' testimony. The sexual activity sometimes took place in Coles County, but also in numerous other locations, Gaines said. The former players said when they were traveling for games, Wolf would call them to his hotel room, have them disrobe, then force them into sex acts, he said. They included oral sex and digital penetration, he added. At least one instance took place at a player's home while her parents were away, and one of them said he once entered her home unannounced, Gaines related. Gaines also said Mattoon police interviewed Wolf shortly before his arrest in October, and he admitted to sexual conduct with the girls. He said Wolf's account of what occurred was consistent with what the former players provided. Pirano didn't present any evidence on his motion, said that Wolf's bond was way over the human possibility of posting. He said the former players named in the charges are now in college and no longer anywhere near here, so that and the no-contact provisions should protect them. Pirano also noted Wolf's lack of a criminal record and said asked O'Brien to set the bond at $5,000 to $10,000 level. In response, Bauer said the magnitude of the sentence Wolf faces, if convicted, makes him a flight risk. The charges against Wolf include criminal sexual assault, which requires a prison sentence of 4 to 15 years with a conviction. Bauer said the sentence for each of those 17 counts for which Wolf was convicted would be added together. Bauer also said the investigation showed a pattern of grooming and Wolf's abusing his position over a long duration. Brian O'Brien scheduled Wolf's next court hearing for February 5th. That's all we have time for in the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 1st, 2017. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.